And this is now session 7.
Okay.
And only we know, did we actually pause or did we hold?
I don't know.
Very still.
Okay. I think we're safe now.
We could do the old...
Okay, play it backwards.
Next session, we want to talk about high availability and load balancing. So we've moved this application into Windows Azure, and there's some problems.
Uh-oh.
Yes.
Why? Tell me. What's going on?
We have SLAs in Windows Azure, right? We have some great SLAs, and the 99.something, 995, it doesn't matter. They're not 100%. We don't have 100% guarantee that nothing is going to go wrong. So we can either accept that and move on and accept that there'll be some downtime. And this downtime could be kind of hardware failure, but it also could be Microsoft rolling out a patch to the host OS, to the hypervisor layer. And when we do that, there's a reboot involved. So we've got to reboot you. Now, if you need to keep going 100% and survive those things, you have to think about high availability. And you might also want to think about load balancing as part of that. The two very tightly linked concepts, although you can kind of have them separate. So we want to jump in. SLAs, I could have just waited, and the SLA is written there for me.
There you go.
It's, you know, computer, hardware, all that kind of things included. My only 100% SLA, and this is only for the benefit of people watching live to take up on this, I will give you a 100% guarantee that at some point in the next year, you will have some downtime on your VM.
There you go.
And if you keep a VM running, a single VM running for a whole year, and you don't have any downtime at all, then you have to give me money or something.
I don't know. I don't think that's in the SLA contract, but...
it probably isn't. LCA, our legal department, are now heading down here, so we better be quick. So
that's right.
Let's introduce a few concepts that we've touched on, but really let's peel back the onion a little bit.
Yeah, just to touch on one more thing on the SLA, I wanted to bring up because, you know, there is some uniqueness in what we offer there too, right? Is we calculate your SLA based on a month of downtime, not on an entire year. And then we also have a financially backed SLA, right? So that we credit you money if things go awry. Right.
Absolutely.
And so that's, you know, you definitely want to read the print in whoever you're going with because that is an important factor, right?
Absolutely. So how do we pull this off then? Well, there's a couple of concepts, fault domains and update domains on here. And the idea basically is if you deploy one machine, then there's bound to be a single point of failure. And typically the single point of failure in a rack is the power and the top of rack switch. So... if you want to get high availability, you've got to deploy at least two machines doing the same thing. And they need to be deployed into different racks. So we avoid that kind of single point of failure. So we call these kind of areas where there's a single point of failure fault domains. And ideally, you want your application deployed between at least two fault domains. We also have a concept called update domains, and this kind of these two things work together because when we go and update the operating system or the hypervisor, we don't do it all at once. What we do is we have a look at your application, and if you've defined what we call an availability set, and we'll see that in the UI in a moment, what we'll do is we'll upgrade some machines in the availability set, but not all of them. And we'll do them in such a way where we don't take all of them down at the same time. So this is the concept of update domains. So if we kind of have a picture of this, maybe, and this is kind of introducing a kind of concept around web and worker roles, but the concept applies the same for virtual machines. We basically have two racks, two separate racks. We deploy two virtual machines between them, and a single failure won't take those both down. How this surfaces to you is through a variety of terminology, and I think that the terminology we landed on in the portal is an availability set. So you're going to see this when you create virtual machines. You can decide to have these machines belong to an availability set. So I think what we're going to do is jump into the Windows Azure portal. And what I want to do is make this highly available, this application that we looked at, the expenses app, highly available. Before I kind of create a new VM, I'm going to dig into this Corny XP Web 01. And I'm going to have a look at a couple of things. First of all, it is running with a DNS name of ConnyXP Web. That would be the cloud service we mentioned earlier. And if I jump on endpoints, you can see we don't have any load balanced endpoints at all. We do have an endpoint for web, PowerShell, and remote desktop. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to create, even though I loaded this from on-premises, I don't have to kind of figure out how to duplicate that. I can create a brand new virtual machine. So essentially what I'm going to do is create another web server. I'm going to install the same app on it, and then I'm going to put it behind a load balancer. And it's super easy with Windows Azure. So I'm going to use a Server 2012. I'm going to give the virtual machine a name. I'm going to call it ConExp Web 02, lots of imagination. I don't even have to use the same machine size. I could pick large, because I pick large because I really don't know how big the other machine is without going out of it. I'm going to pop in a password here. At some point, though, I would domain join this machine. I'm not going to for the purposes of the demo. I'm sure you know how to domain join a machine. But this is the bit we want to get to. This is where I want to say, connect me to an existing virtual machine. And then I get a list and I can say, right, I want to connect to this ConExp Web 01. And now some of the options disappear because I've got to have it in the same network. I don't have to have it, strangely enough, in the same storage account. And I'll put it in the web subnet. And then we'll click on next. And then what we can do is we can say, hey, you know what, I want this as part of an availability set. And I've already created an availability set when I created that first virtual machine. So I've got ConExp Web as the availability set. So I'm going to click on complete, and that's going to start me up a brand new server. It has no knowledge of my application at this point. It's just a plain vanilla server 2012 machine that's going to boot. But it does have some unique kind of properties. First of all, the DNS name is exactly the same. So we're going to have a load balancer now in front of this, so we can load balance traffic between it. The second thing is, and I can't show it until we create it, so we'll jump into Web 01, is it belongs as part of an availability set. And what this does essentially is it says, hey, you know what, don't take both of these machines down at the same time. Or rather, don't knowingly take both of these machines down at the same time. There's always the chance that we're rolling out of a patch and there's a hardware failure. But you know, generally we're in good shape here. And actually, if we flip across to the domain controllers, you can see DC01 is an availability set with DC02. Cool. On the dashboard, the DNS name is ConADDNS01. Now, if I go into the cloud service for that and have a look at the instances, this is where we can see which update domain and which fault domains these belong to. So you can see DC01 belongs to update domain 0 and fault domain 0. DC02 belongs to update domain 1 and fault domain 1. So these are kind of separated. They're close together because they're in that affinity group, but they're separated enough that a single update and a single point of failure within the data center is not going to take both of the machines down. And in fact, if we flip into the five IIS machines that we kind of looked at earlier where the color changed, you can see that we're across two fault domains, but we're across five update domains. So when we're rolling out patches, we're going to take basically a machine down at a time, not two machines or five machines or whatever. And we can control kind of how many update domains and that kind of thing that we want. And we do that through PowerShell on there.
What's the good best practice on how many availability sets you have? Let's say you have eight virtual machines that are all load balanced. Would you want to do one availability set? Should you do four?
It's kind of funky, right? Yeah. Because it really depends upon how many servers that you have and what the load is that you have on them, right? So let's say we have, and the easiest way to think about it, if these are all web servers, actually they are, but let's say we've got five web servers and we're running very hot on those web servers. So maybe CPU's up at 80%, we're getting a lot of traffic there. We only want one machine to go down at a time because we are affecting our response time and the availability of the application. Equally, if we're running five virtual machines and we're at 20% CPU, but we've got five just to handle these kind of spikes, we might be okay with having two machines go off at the same time rather than one at a time. So it really, really depends upon the workload. But generally, if you're deploying an application and thinking about grouping them together, I tend to go for machines of the same type or performing the same function belong in the same availability set. So I put my two domain controllers in the same availability set. I'll put my web servers in a different availability set. I'll put my databases in yet another availability set. And actually, one of the applications we can go in and show you is kind of high availability, if you like, on steroids. And I just need to bring in another subscription, which is Contoso Dev. And this has an application that's running with the two domain controllers, but we also have enabled the SQL always on and deployed that. So we actually have three machines forming part of that cluster. Now, I am by no means a SQL always on expert, and if you ask me any more questions about SQL always on, I will kind of gloss over and talk about subnets. But we have some guidance on WindowsAzure.com, and I actually sat one day and walked through the guidance and kind of clicked through it and got my SQL always on up cluster running in about 40 minutes. And that was from having zero servers to a kind of fully, highly available cluster in about 40 minutes, which was quite impressive. I was impressed.
If David is impressed,
I don't know how long it usually takes to
go
and do that type of thing, but
yeah,
you know,
I know that David was impressed.
I was impressed. Yeah, I think I might have even found someone to tell, and they kind of went, "Huh? What SQL always on?" And I'm like, "I don't know, but it sounds good."
You don't want to have that conversation with your wife because about after SQL, that's it.
Yeah, my 9-year-old knows everything about Windows Azure.
Oh yeah,
not really.
Oh, okay,
so.
Checking.
So if we flip back to the demo machine, we can see Contoso Dev. Now it really gets interesting because now I've got multiple pages of things going on here, which is always fun. But these machines here, we've got DC1, we've got DC2. In fact, I could kind of go like this because I can. What you're not seeing is every time I draw, my tongue comes out the side of my mouth.
These big monitors.
Highly amusing when I do that. Anyway. So I've got two domain controllers here. I've got actually two app servers and two web servers. I'm not going to tell you the app that's running. We're going to come back to it later. And I've got my kind of cluster of machines running there for the SQL always on portion of that. And as well as that, we have obviously cloud services to go along with these. So if I go and dig into one of these SQL ones, you can see I'm called SP Bacon SQL because everything's better with bacon. It never gets old, you know. SP Bacon SQL in here, and I can click on there, go and see the instances and see I'm across three update domains and two fault domains in there, which is quite
interesting. That makes you feel good. Hey, I'm across three update domains.
And what's really cool is, you know, if you were trying to make this application highly available on premises, you would need to double up the hardware.
Yeah.
And you'd need to double up the racks and everything. And here, you're not paying anything more for another server. Yes, you're paying for another server, but there's a fixed price per server, right? It's not like, if you buy a rack of servers and you want a high available, you need two racks of servers.
Right.
But here, you just create two VMs and tell it, put them on different racks.
Not to mention, like, hey, I need to cable this all appropriately and make sure the power supplies are all redundant
power supplies, redundant networking, redundant power, redundant cooling, all that kind of fun stuff. Yeah, which is fun setting up and fun when you're looking at your shopping cart on your favorite hardware vendor's website. That's
until right, you say, okay, time to install on the weekend, and then. And then, you know, so wife, fun. Kids, family, friends, you say, oh, sorry, guys, I have to go install the server racks. Yeah.
No, I'm not going to the pub. I am racking servers.
Did you say Pope?
Pub.
Okay.
Pub.
Okay.
P-U-B.
Pub. Oh, the pub. That sounded like Pope. I was like, wow.
Who thought moving to the U.S. here, English would be a barrier? Anyway. So, let's move on before I dig myself a really deep hole and get escorted out of the country. So, so we've got this application, highly available. We've doubled up all the servers. If we flip back to the virtual machines, that second virtual machine that we created should be up and running now, so that ConWeb 02. Now, at the moment, it does belong to the same availability set. However, we haven't kind of said, go and put some traffic across it. So what we need to do is go and create an endpoint, and I'm going to add a new endpoint here. But instead of just adding a normal endpoint, I'm going to add a load balanced endpoint. And I can pick...
That was so fun, I had to get my own sound in. Anyway,
I'm going to pick HTTP 80, but where does HTTP 80 come from? So let's jump out of that. Let's jump into Web 01, and there we can see we've got this HTTP port 80.
That's a whole other type of HTTP. HTTP.
HTTP.
It's the UK version. It's the UK version of HTTP.
When I speak at conferences, sometimes the comments I get about my accent are hilarious. And they guess every... I'm from Northern England, so the accent is not quite Scottish, not quite Irish, definitely not New Zealand or Australia or South Africa or anywhere else. So I never get that English dude. I always get like, what was that African dude saying? Or what
was that? Yeah, I'm like, what?
It was a great presentation, but I didn't get all of that New Zealand guy's jokes. And that just creases me up every time. Anyway,
you need to put that in your title. My accent? Oh, no. But actually, then you'd miss all those fun comments, though, right?
I would miss all the fun comments. Anyway. They're the ones I'd take notice of. Not really. So, back on the demo, add the endpoint, HTTP, port 80, click on next. We kind of don't need to pick a public port because it's load balanced, it already exists. We need to give it a name, and we don't have to name it the same, but it helps.
How about a double H? HTTP.
HTTP. There's a new protocol.
That's right.
And you've got to say it with a straight back, don't you know? And be all posh in English.
HTTP.
Yes. Anyway, private port 80. Click on it. I'm going to get a
I think that is the most...
I'm going to develop a complex sound and not say any words that have the letter H in.
This web thing. You guess we just get away with
it. that TTP thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've got this protocol. We've got this load balanced endpoint that's being created. You can see it does in fact say load balanced on there. God, I wish I'd discovered this earlier. I need one of these on my desk. If we flip back to Web 01, this isn't load balanced yet. Once it's finished doing the update, that will flip to being load balanced. So do not panic very much.
That was a not panic very much. Okay. Yeah.
So now we've got that set up, the only thing we have to do is go and install IIS and put the application on. Now, there is another way we could have done this. What we could have done is, I'm not going to do it because it would take forever. Well, more time than what we've got. Not actually forever. It would take about 20 minutes.
Okay. Well, that's in this new world. 20 minutes is forever, right?
When you can create a server in like 6 minutes, 20 minutes is like 3 weeks at least.
Pretty much.
What we could have done is once we got Web 01 up and running, we could have RDP'd into it, sysprepped it. And then we could have created a base image and just kind of stamped out cookie cutter style new web servers with our application on. That's kind of pretty cool thing to think about.
Yeah.
I'm not going to walk through how you go and build a SQL Always On cluster. That's a bit more complicated. The guide on WindowsAzure.com does actually work pretty darn well. You should go and check that out. So I kind of jumped ahead of...
I got a question while you're skipping through there. Mr. Shannon says, can VMs be moved between availability sets after they've been created?
Can VMs move between availability sets after being created? So if I click on this VM here, let's go into DC, let's go into Web 01 and go into configuration. We can remove the VM from an availability set and then save that.
There.
And then we could add it to a different availability set.
Done.
Done.
Problem solved in demo form for Mr. Shannon.
Fantastic.
There we go.
Sweet. So that is that kind of wraps up load balancing and high availability. Just a quick recap. We've got to have more than one server to have an SLA in Windows Azure. We can't just have a single VM running and get an SLA. We've got to have two virtual machines running within the same availability set to get that SLA.
Yeah, that's right. And a good related question to that, CRBUKE, I don't know how to pronounce that one,
you should try. No, I don't.
Okay. You almost had me there. You almost had me there. It says, he hasn't seen anywhere. It says, what about backups for hosted machines in Azure? Is that included in the price?
Backups for hosted machines. So there's always the need to still do a backup. And now we have this new kind of set of features in Server 2012 and System Center to allow you to do backups to Windows Azure, right?
That's right, yeah.
And it's in preview, private preview right now?
Right. There is a number of different options that you have out there right now. There's Store Simple. This thing called Store Simple, where you get an appliance and it automatically tiers things, and you have rules and you specify that backed up to Azure.
Yeah.
That's kind of more of an on-premise thing going to Azure as well. But like I said earlier, you know that it is a VM just like any other VM, right? So you can back it up using whatever backup tools you're used to. Could be for our products, right? System Center Data Protection Manager. Data Protection Manager will just back it up to wherever you want it, or we have an option for backing your data up to Windows Azure with DPM. You also have this option.
I love how you answer. You ask the question, and then you're answering the question.
Well,
I'm just gonna like.
You know, maybe that was just
power nap.
Yeah,
power nap in the cloud is 5 seconds.
That was good. You're rested now. You're ready to keep going.
I think the point though with the whole VM thing is it's a Windows machine, so you back it up and you have to worry about backup and business continuity the same way as you do anywhere else.
Right.
I guess we don't provide any kind of more secret sauce to that.
Right. At this time anyway,
At this time anyway.
Yeah. There's a number of backup options that you have, but just like managing your virtual machines, backing them up is not really much different.
Yeah.
Right? So, cool. There you go.
So, any more burning questions or is it break time?
I think, we do have a question that relates back to kind of the previous session, but I think it's still good to ask. What about when you migrate the virtual machines from on-premise, the VHDs? You've got Hyper-V, Hyper-V integration services loaded. Do we need to keep integration services on there when we put it in Azure?
You do not, no.
Okay, and if we have it and we leave it, it's okay too?
Yeah.
Okay, so.
Yeah. Never had an issue with that. I think we pretty much ignore it.
Okay.
I'll probably just put my foot really in my mouth.
All right.
We'll figure it out.
Okay. All right.
So we're going to take a break now, and we'll catch you back in about 10. Thank you.